This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's Ascensus.com.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. On the program today, a reminder that it's a global economy. We only live in it. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, August the 7th. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with a nod to the calendar, in fact, and by pointing out that we are one day shy of 7 months since China officially ended its zero COVID policy. And by pointing out that what a whole lot of people had been expecting to happen has not. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore starts us off with the why and why it matters.
When China's zero COVID policy was lifted earlier this year, a lot of economists and analysts assumed the full might of the second largest economy in the world would be unleashed.
You'd have roughly 5 to 6% growth, that would be driven by a rebound in household consumption based on savings that had been accumulated during the pandemic.
Logan Wright is a partner at Rhodium Group. He says the comeback was expected to be so intense that it would add to global demand for a lot of products and maybe contribute more to inflation here in the U.S. and elsewhere.
None of those trends have materialized.
There has been a rebound, but it's been weaker than expected, Wright says, even below typical pre-pandemic levels. Prices are flat or even falling. Households aren't spending. The main reason, he says, is the property sector is in trouble.
The basic story is that supply in terms of new construction just ran well ahead of fundamental demand for housing in China.
A lot of consumers got caught up in what amounted to a housing bubble, which saddled many of them with debts for homes that never materialized. Consumers dealing with that are not about to go on wild shopping sprees. There are bigger issues at play, too, says Scott Kennedy, a China expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
China is sitting on a mountain of debt.
Particularly, he says, at the local government level.
And a demographic transition, a graying of the population, together making it difficult for any type of stimulus they provide to actually bite.
In the past, Beijing has lit a fire under its economy through investment, often debt-driven, in infrastructure and manufacturing.
That couldn't go on forever.
Aaron Friedberg is professor of politics at Princeton.
There's only so much infrastructure you can build, and there are only so many Chinese exports that other countries can absorb.
He questions whether a government used to tight control will let its economy be innovative and productive enough to spur high growth. On the other hand, China has defied expectations many times in the past. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
The number of the day today is 40, 4-0, that's in percent, and it's the pay raise that workers at Detroit's Big Three automakers are hoping to get in their next contract. The two sides are in negotiations now, and the United Auto Workers Union is swinging for the fences, higher pay, shorter hours, and better benefits. It is quite the switch from the last round of bargaining. Marketplace's Henry Epp has more on the labor dynamics that are giving the union such a big confidence boost.
UAW President Sean Fain says there's a clear reason to push for a big increase in a new contract for workers at GM, Ford, and Stellantis. He spoke to workers last week in a live stream address.
We have to work longer and harder just to maintain the same standard of living we've had before.
So that's why the UAW is seeking a 40% wage increase over the course of the union's next contract, which seems like a lot, right?
Well, in normal times, yes, it would sound like a huge raise and it would sound like an unrealistic expectation.
Art Wheaton is at Cornell's School of Industrial and Labor Relations. He says these are not normal times. Inflation has been high, the labor market is still tight, and unions in other industries have negotiated sizable wage increases this summer, like pilots for United Airlines and workers for UPS. Plus, Wheaton says, citing a Gallup poll from last year, unions are well-liked right now.
So the general public has over a 71% favorability of unions.
Combine those factors with strong profits for carmakers, and the UAW and unions more generally are in a rare position of bargaining strength, says Anne LaFaso, a law professor at West Virginia University.
Most of the time, the union is not in a good position. Most of the time, they're not going to have all these factors for them.
So it makes sense for the union to come into these negotiations with high demands, but she says they'll likely settle for less.
This is not their bottom line, I'm sure. This is aspirational.
And automakers are pushing back. In a statement, GM said the UAW's demands would, quote, threaten our ability to do what's right for the long-term benefit of the team. So expect a lot more back and forth before the contract deadline next month. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
There was confidence all over the place on Wall Street today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Big data release of the week is Thursday. The latest reading on inflation will be upon us. Consumer prices have been falling for months. The CPI is at 4% now, down from 9% last summer. But some prices are still rising faster than overall inflation. Among them, car repairs, which are currently almost 20% more expensive than they were a year ago. Why? Here's Marketplace's Samantha Fields with some answers.
If something goes wrong with your car these days, you might have trouble just finding someone to fix it. That's what happened to Kristen Gcheck recently when her check engine light went on.
I called around in a couple places, couldn't even get me in to get it evaluated until mid-September.
Gcheck, a policy advisor at the Chicago Fed focused on the auto industry, says that's one reason it's gotten more expensive to repair cars.
There's a tight labor market and, you know, wages have gone up, hours have gone up.
But it's not just labor, it's parts, too. David Long owns Omega Auto Clinic in Newton, Kansas. And he says in the last couple years,
there's a lot of things that have really doubled and tripled in price, like R134 Freon to charge up people's air conditioners. It used to be $90 a bottle. Now it's $500.
Car batteries used to run him about $100. Now they're closer to $200. And he says it's not unusual to get a car in, find it needs a certain part, say a catalytic converter.
And you look it up and it says out of stock, national back order. So you do find someone that does have the parts. They know they're the only ones selling those. They mark them up pretty heavily.
As with everything, when we talk inflation, a lot of the rising cost of car repair boils down to supply and demand and residual pandemic issues with both parts and labor. But K. Venkatesh Prasad at the Center for Automotive Research says there's another big non-pandemic reason. Newer cars are more complicated to fix.
Almost anything you touch now is coupled to something else or has sensors embedded in it, whether it's bumpers or rearview mirrors.
So often now, a seemingly minor issue becomes a big, expensive repair.
Let's say your side view mirrors got damaged as you were entering a garage. Just 5 years ago, it would have been a relatively easy replacement, pure mechanical. Now it involved a camera sitting in that side view mirror. That camera unit was controlled with a microchip somewhere.
So there are more parts to fix that are more expensive. And the work itself is going to take longer, which means you're going to be charged more for labor, too.
It's not just individual bits and pieces anymore. Everything's tied together.
David Long had a customer come into his shop in Kansas recently because their car radio wasn't working.
And what we found out was the radio is fine, but it needs to talk to the computer that controls the multimedia interface for the car. That computer was bad. And the computer was $2,000, and then taking it all apart, getting to it, and it was going to be $3,000 or $4,000. Back in the day, you could just replace your radio.
For a couple hundred dollars. In addition to running Omega Auto Clinic, Long also has a YouTube channel, Car Wizard. And in some of his videos, he's started explaining why car repairs are getting so much more expensive.
Today, we're going to continue the series of My What is Broken? We're going to talk about how this little black box can cost you $1,000, possibly $2,000.
The little black box he's holding up in the video is a motor that helps control the car's heat and AC.
Back in the old days, when you would change the temperature or the floor, vent, defrost, it would literally have these metal cables. There was no electronics involved. It was all mechanical, and they rarely ever broke. And when they did, it wasn't that big of a deal.
Now, Long explains, it's all electronic, and it's crammed way up inside the dashboard, where it's hard to access and expensive to fix. And he says this is the future, as cars get more high-tech.
I've told people in the past where we were used to $500 repairs, $600 repairs, maybe $1,000 if something's bad. I told them in the next coming years, we need to start preparing for $2,000 and $5,000 and $10,000 repairs.
He says that's what it's going to take to fix cars. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Money in the American Rescue Plan to provide debt relief for farmers of color. Most of those payments have yet to go out because white farmers have filed suit claiming discrimination. 2 years ago, though, when the debt relief plan was first announced, we had Dwayne Goldman on to talk about it. He's a senior advisor for racial equity to the Secretary of Agriculture. So given the continued delays in those payments, we called him up again. Dr. Goldman, thanks for coming on.
Great to be here, Kai.
So let me ask you, first of all, you're a practicing farmer in addition to doing all the policy stuff that we'll get to in a minute. How are things on the farm these days?
It was a challenging year. We had lots of rain early on that made getting the crop in kind of challenging. And then rains in, excuse me, in June that were really helpful. And now it's hot and dry and we're trying to keep everything watered and coming along and things are looking pretty well.
Good. Good, good. I imagine all the policy work you do and the advising you do at the Department of Agriculture keeps you pretty busy and as you said, away from the farm. I do want to note, though, that these are challenging times, not just for you as a farmer, but for you as a guy who now has to convince black farmers in this economy that the Department of Agriculture is on their side, because it's difficult for black farmers to get the resources that they believe they have been promised from the federal government.
Right. You're spot on, Mr. Rizdahl. I mean, it is challenging, and some of the hurdles that we've encountered as we've been marching toward a more equitable USDA has heightened the challenges. But we continue to make steady progress towards working with black farmers and all of our customers on making sure that, you know, we show up the right way, are addressing their needs, their concerns in a way that is meaningful to them. Farming is it's a lovely occupation, but it's very diverse. And so, you know, it's certainly not a one-size-fits-all approach, particularly when you look at the diversity of our producers and their unique backgrounds. But, we do continue to make steady progress.
As you look at your, are they customers, clients? I don't know. But as you look at black farming in this economy, what do you suppose their biggest challenges are?
A couple of them. On the one hand, I've heard it said that when other farmers get a cold, black farmers get pneumonia.
Oh, man.
And that's to point out that because of some of the disparities that's well established in the history of black farmers in this country, you do find a set of customers that have been left out of key opportunities. And we find ourselves trying to deal with those disparities. And so you asking about my little farm, the fact that we're now set up to irrigate, for instance, there's still a gap in irrigation among black farmers. And that means that when drought comes, a lot of them find themselves in positions where they're not able to respond, so that you get behind and it gets harder and harder to adapt and keep production where it needs to be in order to sustain an operation. And as we get serious about this work, we find ourselves trying to invest in policies that will really help improve infrastructures that will make all of our farmers more resilient. And that's certainly important to black farmers.
You strike me, Dr. Goldman, and look, we've never met and we've spoken exactly twice. You strike me as a guy who doesn't like to sit in an office, but rather would get out and talk to people. So I'm right, okay? You'd rather get out and talk to people and maybe walk their land with them. And I guess my question is,
And please don't take this pejoratively, but how do you get them to trust you when the misdeeds on the part of the federal government and the Department of Agriculture go back decades, if not more, in the treatment of black farmers in this economy?
You know, it can be tough. Mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity to spend time with some of our farmers who are literally pissed off. And it's not unwarranted. What I have to remind myself is, Duane, they're pissed off at the system, not necessarily you, even though it gets hard to separate those sometimes, okay? Yeah. But the one thing that I've learned from engaging in those kinds of discussions is that eventually you'll come to common ground. When you can shift the conversation from complaints and criticisms to solutions, that's when we start to make progress. I mean, growing up as a third generation farmer in Southern Arkansas, I can now look back on our history and see some of the missed opportunities. I can see things that were afforded to some folks in our community, some of our white neighbors, that my dad really didn't have a realistic chance at. Mm-hmm. And it's those kinds of things, it's those kinds of observations that I think lends a little bit of credibility to the work that we're trying to do and helps us, you know, on our path to equity.
Dr. Duane Goldman is a senior advisor for racial justice and equity at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, also a farmer, so he knows what he's talking about. Dr. Goldman, thanks for your time, sir. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Always a pleasure, Mr. Risdahl.
Coming up.
And there's dozens of pinhole leaks inside of this operation.
Gonna take more than duct tape to fix that up, huh? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 407 today, 1.1%, 35,473. The NASDAQ added 85 points, about 0.6%, 13,994. The S&P 500 up 40 points, 0.9%, 45.18 there. Henry Epp was telling us about the UAW and what they want out of these negotiations. So where did the automakers land today, anyhow? GM revved up 1.4%. Ford accelerated 0.3%. Stellantis, once upon a time Fiat Chrysler, once upon a time before that, just Chrysler, slowed down 0.3%. Campbell Soup announced it's going to buy Sovos Brands. That's parent company for sauce maker Rouse and the Italian cuisine company Michelangelo's. Two words, Michelangelo's. Soup makers paying more than $2 billion cash. Campbell's poured off nearly 1.8% today. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's a little bit of feast or famine for downtowns across this economy. Some are still struggling to recover from the pandemic. Remote work has turned once-packed central business districts in Seattle and San Francisco into mere shelves of their former selves. Office occupancy rates and foot traffic there, still just a fraction of what they once were. Some other downtowns, though, are kind of booming. Foot traffic in downtown Salt Lake City this spring hit 139% of what it was in the before times. That's according to cell phone data tracked by the University of Toronto, should you be curious. Anyway, what's happening in Salt Lake City might have some lessons for the rest of the country, as Marketplace's Matt Levin explains.
On Monday mornings, there's usually a line out the door for the Queen Amans and ham and cheese croissants at Eva's Bakery in downtown Salt Lake City. McKay Sanchez has worked there for about 5 years.
We are like way busier now post-pandemic than the store has ever been. I mean, it is crazy now.
Sanchez says a lot of the customers are people in finance, lots of folks from Goldman Sachs.
A bunch of people transferring here because, you know, big cities like San Francisco and New York City are extremely expensive. Salt Lake City's not that bad.
A cheaper cost of living, beautiful scenery, and a booming economy helped the greater Salt Lake area grow by 51,000 people last year. Those new arrivals aren't commuting downtown to work. Office occupancy is still down by about 40%. Dee Brewer at the Salt Lake City Downtown Alliance says more people are coming downtown for fun.
Our nighttime and social economy is really growing. Sports, arts, entertainment is really driving regional visitation.
Salt Lake City is also luring more young people to live downtown. New condos and office-to-apartment conversions are forecast to double the downtown population in 2 years. Tracy Haddon Lowe with the Brookings Institution says other cities should look to more housing as a tonic for empty downtown offices.
Live-work downtowns where you can just walk to your job, these places are seeing higher levels of office utilization as well.
McKay Sanchez says she just signed a new lease on a downtown apartment, just a 5-minute walk from the bakery. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
It's been a very, very good 18 months for big oil and gas companies, which have profited handsomely from spiking energy prices since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. It is uncontroversial to say, though, that the more fossil fuels we use, the worse it is for the planet, which prompts me to mention a recent report from the International Energy Agency that finds that an investment of just $75 billion, yes, real money, but I say just because that $75 billion is just 2% of the oil and gas industry's profits last year. The International Energy Agency says that would go a long way toward cutting emissions of methane, the main ingredient in natural gas, and, as it happens, also one of the biggest contributors to global warming. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has more on that from just outside Bakersfield, California.
On a stretch of highway surrounded by a patchwork of cornfields and oil rigs, Cesar Aguirre from the Central California Environmental Justice Network fires up a very expensive and very loud infrared camera. He aims it at the rusting metal columns and pipes of a refinery that's operated here for the last 9 decades.
This big tail right here, those are all emissions that are coming off of the flare.
A stream of hydrocarbons visible in the camera's viewfinder can be hard to see with the naked eye.
And there's dozens of pinhole leaks inside of this operation.
Aguirre is out surveying facilities like this all the time. Today, he'll be filing a report with state regulators on emissions coming off a tank on the refinery's grounds.
I can see here that the black tube has a hatch that's open, and it looks like it's just blowing out into the open air.
While a lot of us associate carbon dioxide, or CO2, with global warming, Arvind Ravi Kumar, co-director of the Energy Emissions Modeling and Data Lab at UT Austin, says in the near term, methane is much more harmful.
Methane has over 80 times the warming impacts of carbon dioxide.
The compound lasts an average of 12 years in the atmosphere, and so, Ravi Kumar says,
if we immediately and quickly reduce man-made methane emissions now, we should start seeing the effect of those reductions within our lifetimes.
A cadre of governments, scientists, tech startups, and even the oil and gas industry itself all say they're working on it. Aaron Padilla is vice president of corporate policy at the American Petroleum Institute, a trade group.
We are a major source of methane emissions in the United States and globally, alongside agriculture and other natural sources. And so we know that we need to do our part to reduce methane emissions.
And it's made that a priority, Padilla says. He believes they've had some success.
When you can prevent methane from leaking or being emitted, then there's more natural gas that you can sell and that consumers can use as energy.
Late last month, the EPA and the Department of Energy announced around $1.5 billion in Inflation Reduction Act funding to track and reduce methane emissions from oil and gas operations. The EPA is also developing new regulations aimed at improving the accuracy of the industry's reported emissions for methane and other greenhouse gases. This older well was audibly leaking when Clark Williams Derry of the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis stumbled across it on a trip to the Bakersfield area last year. California's Central Valley is dotted with older wells.
When it's so easy for an amateur to walk out into the field and find a hissing well, you know the problem is real.
It might make some economic sense for industry players to capture methane escaping from active equipment, but with the older stuff,
cleanup is just an expense. There is very little benefit to these companies to pay for the sometimes tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars that it can cost to plug and properly abandon an idle well.
He says methane emissions from these wells may be invisible, but that doesn't reduce the climate and safety threat they pose. In Lamont, California, I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, this one is for those of you who've gotten one of those car warranty robocalls on your cell phones. I do. I see you all nodding out there. I see you. Anyway, today the FCC announced a $300 million fine, its biggest ever, against two men who, under a variety of corporate aliases, made 5 billion robocalls to more than 500 million phone numbers in 3 months back in 2021. All right, here is your moment of economic context, which I believe is actually the definition of irony. You know, I'm sure, how some companies are requiring people to come back to the office in some way, shape, or form. On that list of companies now, Zoom. If you live near an office, you got to be there 2 days a week. Zoom. Got to go to the office. Can't be remote all the time. Our daily production team includes Livy Burdett, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Sophia Terenzio. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.